This is a Hat Trick podcast.
Oh, lovely.
Do you remember your sex education? Was it helpful to you? Was it filled with scientific information?
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Rather than real, practical advice. I'm Diggory Waite, and this is The Real Sex Education. In this podcast, I'll be interrogating sexual myths, posing sex questions to special guests, and opening up our mailbox to answer your relationship conundrums. In order to do this, though, I need an expert. A sexpert, if you will. But the only sex and relationship therapist I know is my mum. Hello, mum.
Hello, Diggs.
Hello and welcome to The Real Sex Education After School. I'm Diggory Waite and I'm joined as ever by accredited sex and relationship therapist Kate Campbell. Hello, mum.
Hello, Diggs.
Today is a very special episode as per usual because we are talking about...
sex.
Yes, exactly. We're going to talk about sex. But it's another special episode because it's more questions from you, our listeners. You've sent in questions for mum, and I guess me as well, on our anonymous Google form, which you can find in the bio of this episode or our social media channels. We are at The RSV Pod on Instagram, TikTok and X.
Formerly known as Twitter.
Wonderful. I think that's all the housekeeping we need to do for now. But yeah, guys, please do keep sending those in. Today, we're going to talk about ADHD.
ADHD. Before...
yes, we've got a question about ADHD, which we'll get to. But just before we plough on with that, please can you tell us what ADHD is?
Well, ADHD is attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. But there's also attention deficit disorder. And there's different types as well. People have difficulty concentrating with ADD, and with ADHD, they might have more difficulty sitting still, not fidgeting. Often their brains are very full of all kinds of things. They're easily distracted. Sometimes they have a lot of sensory issues. Quite often, if people on the autistic spectrum also have ADD or ADHD.
Yeah, and it can really present in all sorts of ways,
in
right?
All sorts of ways, yeah.
The sort of the understood common thing is the not being able to focus on certain things and being distracted and all that sort of stuff. But that sometimes in some people isn't always the big thing, and there's other stuff that's in there as well. But I thought I'd start this as well because it's very interesting we're talking about this today, because a couple of weeks ago we talked about idiosyncratic masturbatory styles, and we talked about whether masturbation could affect the way you had sex. And there was a particularly long message in there and long question there, which you said beforehand, you were like, oh, you're going to be all right reading this because I'm dyslexic. And we had that guy write in again. And he said, I'm the 36-year-old gay man who wrote the long question that you answered in the recent episode. And I want to apologize for the long text, as I didn't know you were dyslexic. How bloody cute. Yeah. I too suffer from text, ADHD and slow reading speed, so I can relate. I also want to thank you both for the answer to my question. Two love hearts. Writing from Barcelona, Spain.
Which begins with B.
Yes.
It's BS.
Total bullshit. Yeah,
no,
it's bullshit.
It's
they
B
come
and
from
S,
Istanbul.
Not yes. An I, because everybody who writes in comes from an I place. So this
the
is now
curse,
a B the, and
yeah,
S
the curse
place.
Is, exactly, the curse is broken. No more eyes, which is fantastic. Also, their lunch. They mentioned their lunch for you, mum.
Yeah.
Their lunch, Lebanese fattoush and tawouk.
I wonder what that is.
I looked it up. It all looks delicious.
Ooh, yum.
I've definitely had fattoush before, I think. I'm
yeah,
not sure
me
about
too, but tawouk. The other one. I better have, but might not have known.
Yeah, tawouk is like, it looks like sort of kebabs.
Ooh,
but
yeah.
On a stick, you know, like, is that right? Stick kebabs
kebab
or whatever?
On a stick, yeah.
It does look delicious. But there you go. But interestingly, I had to read that out as well because they've got ADHD. And that leads us into our first question of the day. Hi. Could you talk about if ADHD has an effect on a person's sex life? I saw a post elsewhere suggesting it makes people almost forget to make time for it, and that it can be common for people with ADHD to have a lower libido. Is there truth in this and strategies to overcome it? Thank you. Love the podcast, by the way. Female, 34, bisexual, and a straight presenting happy marriage from good old Yorkshire. Again,
begins with why.
Come on, guys. This is good. This is good. We're getting the podcast out there. So then, Mum, can you help our friendly female, 34, bisexual, and a happy straight presenting marriage?
Yeah, I mean, some people have a very high sex drive. Some people have a very low sex drive. Mm. And I think, you know, the problem is that you can apply anything to anything, can't you? If you're looking for it, you'll find it.
Yeah, right.
And I'm inclined to say maybe ADD and ADHD are ways of being and we shouldn't pathologize them too much. Now, I'm aware that it helps a lot to have a label for something. And for a lot of people, it's an enormous relief to get that label.
Yes, absolutely.
But again, it's a bit, you know, there are degrees and, you know, some people will find it more difficult to concentrate and remember things than other people. And again, it can vary over time, depending on context and all of that. But a lot of people feel my brain chemistry is different and I'm looking for help with that. I mean, I can't sit still for the life of me. And I remember being at school and thinking, right, I'm really going to concentrate today. There is no way the teacher's ever going to get to find that I'm not concentrating. I'm really going to be concentrating. And the next thing I'd know, the teacher would be shouting, what did I just say? And I'd have no idea.
Well, I mean, that has, I think, continued later on in your life where what am I constantly doing, which we edit out?
You are constantly telling me to stop, to sit still, stop kicking the table, stop playing with my pen.
Yeah, which is all stuff that we've cut out from the podcast. But do let us know, listeners,
if you'd like. I do this all the time. He's always telling me to move the screen, to move my chair nearer, to change the microphone, because I'm moving around so much. Yeah. I'm changing
and
position.
Fidgeting. And then when I say every episode, we're at the RSC Pod on Instagram, TikTok, and X. Your line is formerly known as Twitter, which is a line that you basically wrote for yourself weeks and weeks and weeks ago. And every time you go, oh, sorry, I wasn't listening. And I think, what the hell's going on here?
Well, it's not that to be fair, I'm not listening. I am listening, but I'm listening too much and I'm thinking about things.
Mm.
And I'm thinking, oh, you know, wonder what's coming up. Oh, it's ADHD today. Oh, that's interesting. I'm not.
But can I just underline the point that you made, though? Which I think is a really nice point to say, that this is another way of being. Yeah. I mean, when you step backwards and look at the number of people who have quote-unquote disabilities, let's say in the UK alone, I think it's like 10 million people, which is like one in six or something. When you take a look at what counts neurodiverse, because technically I've got dyslexia, and apparently that's a form of neurodiversity. Yeah. So that I'm linked with my brothers in arms who have autism, who have ADHD, that sort of thing. And when you think about that, at the end of the day, it's a really good point that you make, where it's sort of like we've all got stuff going on and we've all got ways that you could say that we're different and that we're unique.
Yeah.
And like you say, sometimes it's helpful to have those labels and sometimes it's helpful to have general ideas. But at the end of the day, and I mean, this always, we could say this every episode, but it comes down to the individual, you know, how does it present for them?
And how you accommodate it.
Exactly.
And sometimes, I mean, we talk a lot about the DSM, which is the American descriptions of different sexual problems and psychiatric problems as well. But the thing is, they need those descriptions, very, very tight descriptions, so that they can get a code, so they can get insurance to pay for their treatment.
Yeah.
So we don't need that so much, unless you're having private healthcare in this country. Mm. But we still have all these little descriptions that we call things, and actually people often don't fit into those nice and neatly, and you know, if you're dyslexic, there are so many different kinds of dyslexia. So what we don't want to do is to pathologize people.
Absolutely not. I mean, funnily enough, just to cut in there, I mean, when talking about the dyslexia, people think that, you know, the way that it shows to me is it takes me about 1,000 years to read and understand a paragraph. It will make total sense, but sometimes I'll be reading a sentence like 3 or 4 times and go, well, that doesn't make sense. And then eventually, so I look away, look to do something else, and then come back and read the sentence. It makes total sense. I don't know how to explain that. However, one thing that it presents in other people is their spelling's really bad. My spelling's really good. Well, but I think when I write it down, I think my spelling's not so bad. So it does present in different ways for different people. I've now called, you know, people are going to see me in the street and be like, spell phenomenal or spell idiosyncratic, and then I'm going to be put on the spot. And so for ADHD, ask your partner or ask yourself and try and work things out. Something that I never do, which I should, is journal. And the reason for journaling is not only does it help you put things down. You can get what's in your head on the page and, you know, help you work through things, maybe just and process them in your own way. But also, if you look back at your journal and then read, you'll start to see patterns. Yeah. And maybe with stuff like this, you can work out, okay, maybe a part of your journal, maybe a part of your diary, you say that today was a good sex day, or, you know, today I had this, that, and the other. But you might be able to read around that and work out there might be triggers and patterns that are making this happen.
You can see your progress, can't you? I mean, I think one of the things, I mean, I'm such an advocate. I drive people mad saying, you should schedule everything.
God, you do, yeah. I do. Showed me enough times, yeah.
Yeah, but the thing is, if you have a problem concentrating, or you have a problem remembering, or you have a problem with procrastination, or you're easily distracted, or you're hyper focused, which is another thing that can happen with ADD, then you might not get everything done. There are so many reasons why you might not. So if you have your schedule with everything put into the schedule for all the different times of day, then you can just do what you're meant to be doing when you're meant to be doing it. Mm-hmm. And if you've got to stop now and go and collect your children from school, it will say that. Mm-hmm. And then you'll do that thing.
Yeah.
So if you know what time you're supposed to look at your schedule, then you'll, I mean, that's the problem. You might have to have alarms if it's really bad, but that's okay.
But that's okay. You know, setting the alarms to make that happen, it works. And I think, you know, putting it back to sex, though, you know, the question is, how can it affect your sex life? Which is, yes.
You've put your sex on the schedule.
Yeah. And we are constantly telling people, with ADHD or not, or ADD
everybody,
or not,
schedule.
We're telling everybody to schedule their sex.
Yes.
Yeah. Because is sex spontaneous, Mum?
No.
Never.
No. Why is it not? Well, sometimes it is. But why, Diggs, is it not spontaneous?
Because let's say me and my partner, we're going on a date. The date's on Friday. And we go, okay, well, afterwards, do you want to sleep by my house? I go, yeah. I go, brilliant. Well, potentially something might happen. And if it does, I'm going to shave my legs. I'm going to make sure I've washed my nice pants. And I'm going to wear those on the date, and I'm going to wear all my nice perfume. And you know what? I'm not going to have dessert, just because otherwise maybe I'll feel too full, just in case some hanky panky happens later. Basically, what am I doing there? I'm preparing for a possibility of sex, and thus it is not becoming spontaneous at this point.
People say, oh, we had sex all the time at the beginning of the relationship. And what they did, well, they had that, you know, if you're going on a date, you're maybe expecting to have sex at the end of the evening, or at the beginning of the evening, or all the way through the evening. You're anticipating lucky. That and you'll probably be more surprised if you don't do that than if you do. And also at the beginning of relationships, people are full of hormones, which make them want to shag more. So once those wear off, it's more difficult. And if you're living together, you can do it all the time. You're not making those preparations. And some people don't want to have sex if they're not squeaky clean and in the mood and they haven't got anything else to do, which you ring fence that time if you go on a date. This is our time. The context is the date and sex. Whereas at home, the context is making the sandwiches for lunch tomorrow.
Yeah.
Getting the washing out, you know, that.
Yeah.
All of those things.
Whereas, you know, you can schedule some time. I mean, I guess, in you know, with the way that things go, usually you'd imagine maybe towards the end of the day and sometimes the evening, where you can just lie in bed together naked or do whatever, these moments of intimacy that you might have to schedule, which might seem boring, but kind of needs to be done, because otherwise they'll just get put to the wayside.
Well, when it comes to actual sex therapy, one of the first things you do, and one of the most important things to do, is to put aside some time. And when people stop and think about it, when you actually say, when could you do these experiments that they have to do, they say, oh, well, oh no, we're really busy. Quite often, sometimes they say, oh, we'll fit it in. And you go, well, no, when will you fit it in? You know, tell me now when you're going to do it. Because it's really hard for people. They realise that the reason they say, oh, you know, our sex life has really drifted, we've drifted apart. No, they've just got no time. And unless you actually make the time, that happens. So a lot of people, for a lot of people, it's, you know, weekend morning.
Yeah, exactly. Sunday morning, the kids are off to Christian school or whatever.
That's what they used to do in the olden days. People used to have sex on a Sunday afternoon when the kids were at Sunday school.
I remember you telling me that.
Yeah.
And I always found that so funny.
I think these days they're watching cartoons.
Yeah, but the kids are watching cartoons.
Mm.
Yeah, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And you're upstairs, bonking away. Wonderful.
Or even just having a nice chat and a fiddle around. You know,
yeah.
It's all very...
Yeah, a chin wag and a fiddle.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, there are some people that say, we're going to have a bath together every Wednesday night. And they have that time and they can have a chat or they can get jiggy if they want to.
Absolutely. I mean, just to come back then to the question, can you talk about if ADHD has an effect on a person's sex life? Absolutely, it can.
Mm.
And like you said, some people may potentially forget to have sex. I mean, I find that interesting. Maybe for some people, maybe that's the case. I imagine we talked about, though, the struggling to maintain focus in sexual situations.
Well, struggling to maintain focus, that can happen. And, you know, that's another reason for scheduling, because one, you know you're going to be in that situation or in a situation where it could happen if you wanted it to. And that can be quite exciting. So you can start the flirting earlier and get some build up to it. So then you're more likely to stay on track rather than, you know, if somebody pounces on you and says, we haven't had sex for ages, we're going to do it now. It's not spontaneous for them because they've maybe been planning this, but the other person might go, blimey, I'm thinking about crab meat. What? You know, and
why are they thinking about crab meat?
I don't know, but I've got to turn my attention from crab meat
to his meat.
Oh, Diggory.
Hopefully he hasn't got crabs.
Oh, Diggory.
What?
Well, I don't know why I would have, but you know, or if you're focusing hugely on something, then it's difficult to stop it and move away and go and do the thing you're required to do. So it is about organization, really. But this applies to an awful lot of people.
Yeah. I don't think that's just due to the fact that TikTok and Instagram and the world has eroded our ability to focus on things for more than 7 seconds.
Except it has.
It has.
As well.
And you know, because people are, a lot more people being diagnosed with ADHD now. Maybe there is something to say for that.
Well, I keep hearing about people who say in the middle of sex, their partner's picking up their phone.
How do we feel about that?
Well, it's not great, is it?
It doesn't feel amazing.
Yeah. So, I mean, people do that. I mean, they have their phone next to their head or something, and they're distracted by the phone suddenly pinging on or something. And so they look, oh, look, I've got an alert. Wonder what that means. Oh, so-and-so's texted me. You know, and I guess you're more likely to do that if you have difficulty concentrating at the best of times.
Yeah, exactly. I suppose that's true. Yeah, and you're distracted, which again, you know, comes into this. But also, we've talked about the hyperactivity. I mean, restlessness may affect one's ability to slow down and enjoy sex.
And really, really relax and really be in the moment. We talked about being in your body rather than in your head. That's going to be particularly difficult.
Yeah. We talked about that last episode. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, impulsivity apparently is one of the things as well, which might lead to risky sexual decisions or poor communication in some circumstances, and mood and emotional regulation sometimes in some people with ADHD is less good, you'd say.
But that applies to loads and loads and loads of situations and conditions and people as well. And with practically everything they say, I mean, literally practically everything they say, oh, there is a risk of impulsive sex with this. So it's more dangerous. You know, they could not wear a condom, or they could have sex with somebody they've only just met or something like that, which is really risky. Or low sex drive is really common with this group of people. And, you know, you get both all the time.
Yeah, you get both.
So, you know, people have a high sex drive, people have a low sex drive. They concentrate, they don't concentrate. If you feel you have a particular problem with those things, then you know about it and you can do something about it. But it's not a get out of jail free card either.
Yeah.
What you have to think about is, do I really want to have sex? Am I consenting to this? There's all of that in the mix as well.
Yeah.
Don't use your condition as an excuse for not having sex if you don't want to have it be upfront.
Yeah, and find the real reasons why. We laser focused on that. That was good. We did a good job. Right, let's answer some more of your questions in part two, right after this.
People often ask me what my regular London pub is, but that assumes there's a pub I can easily return to, so please stop asking that.
London Pub Reviews, written by Paul Ewan and featuring Tim Key. A Hat Trick podcast.
Did you save my seat? Why? I'm at a completely different pub now, with different seats. Catch up.
Available now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Drinking with dignity. Yes, sir. Yes, madam. That's me all over.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome back to The Real Sex Education After School. We're going to jump straight in to the next question here. So this one says, I find it hard to stay aroused during and before sex, and even on my own at times, no matter how attracted I am to my partner. Is this normal? Is there anything that can be done to help me feel more aroused? As sex is quite painful when I'm not fully aroused, yet I find it difficult to stay slash be aroused. I am a straight woman.
Yeah, so lots of things. Is there sufficient stimulation? Are you taking any medication? A big reason for not being able to stay aroused or to get aroused is due to medication and sometimes just being tired.
Mm.
There are all kinds of reasons. I mean, sometimes with people like this, if you change the context, then everything changes. So if you're on holiday, no problem at all. But when you're at home and you are tired and it's just not the mood and the vibe, it is difficult to get into it. And I think most people would say that they'd been masturbating and they'd got bored halfway through. I think that happens to everybody at some point.
Yeah.
You know, you thought it was the day for it and it's not. And that can happen with sex as well. I think part of this is the expectation you've got to get aroused and you've got to climax, you know, and you've got to do that to please your partner. Actually, you don't have to. You can have a nice cuddle and you can have more arousing sex. But even if you do, you still don't have to climax if it's not the day for it.
Mm.
The people in research, the people that are most satisfied with their sex lives are people that don't expect an orgasm every time. But they do expect to enjoy what they do and to be in control of what they do. So if they want to stop, they can say so and it'll be okay.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, with this person, though, they say, you know, it's a straight woman. So maybe if they're talking about intercourse, you know, could you say try some lube if you're not fully aroused? I mean, because apart from the thing that you've just said of like, if you're not fully aroused, think about the context and I guess preheat the oven, so to speak, before... You know, sticking a bun in there.
Yes, if you have a problem with lubrication, then yes, of course you should be using lube. But if you're healthy, you're not menopause, you're not postmenopause or anything like that, you should get sufficiently aroused with your own lubrication before you have intercourse. If you're relying on lube, then you're not stimulated enough when you start, you're doing it too soon. Now, I also know that sometimes people like a quickie and they like it when they're not aroused and they just want to get straight in there. That's choice and that's fine.
Yeah.
But generally speaking, you need to be aroused to a certain extent or you're not going to enjoy it because there's no nerve endings. I mean, you've got the clitoral complex, which can be stimulated, but the vagina itself, it's not full of nerves that are going to be sexually aroused.
In the same way that the pinprick of your clitoris is.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. It's not, you know, it's not an arousable area in the same way. So yes, I mean, you can look for medical problems and medical reasons. That's why I think quite often it is that someone's on antidepressants. Interestingly, if you're on the pill, on the contraceptive pill, people often lose desire then as well.
Yeah.
Because you don't have those hormone fluctuations. And an awful lot can affect your hormones as well. So even if you're not on a hormonal contraceptive, or even if you're not on antidepressants or something else that affects you, you still may very well find yourself having days when you're more, when you're just more interested, and other days when you're not so interested.
Yeah, which I think is allowed. And I think sometimes, yeah, like that idea that you should constantly be swinging from the chandeliers, as we like to say, in throes of orgasmic ecstasy, just isn't realistic, girlfriend of mine. Wait, what? Sorry, I don't know what came over me then. Amazing. So,
too much information.
Okay, we've got another question here, and another semi-long one, but I will read this all out verbatim, so we'll see what we make of this one. I am a 28-year-old gay man whose sex life starred after discovery of my sexuality at uni, 17 to 21-year-old. Oh, he went to uni at 17, that's cool. Since then, I have been introduced and happily enveloped by with world of BDSM. Again, verbatim. Everything from the more mainstream and edging to hardcore kink play with vacuum and suspension bondage, for example. I am big on consent, rules, safe play, traffic light checking and safe words, and meeting up with guys pre-fun for non-play discussion. My question is twofold. One, I was taken a bit aback when in other discussions on the podcast around CNC play, that's consensual non-consent play, that it was suggested that planned play was a red flag. Or sorry, they've said planned play was a red flag. I assume it was meant in regards to certain fantasies, question mark, as I believe discussion of kink play destigmatizes, for many, the unknown and helps with safe play.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Yeah, maybe we should just answer that now. Yeah, I mean, I thought we did
Absolutely. I mean, we say the opposite of what you've said. We've said you should plan. Absolutely, should plan. Plan yes. hard, yeah. Don't do anything that takes anybody by surprise. Be aware of what they're consenting to. I mean, I know you're talking about CNC play, but you can still talk about all the things that come within that. So absolutely, the opposite of, I think you've misheard.
All I can do is, because it will probably be me, all I can do is apologise for giving off that impression, perhaps. So, you know, but that is absolutely not okay. His mum is absolutely right. So yeah, safeguards, pre-planning, that is the fundamentals of kink play. And in fact, I feel like kink is on the rise at the moment. And part of the problem with that is people are taking it up and not taking it seriously, you know, and they're not doing the sorts of things we're talking about. They're not planning. They're not buying the right equipment. They're not using safe words and proper consent and stuff like that. So absolutely not. But let's move on to the second part of the question. Number two, I do find it that my brain sometimes struggles to allow me to enjoy quote-unquote vanilla sex if I was to hook up with a guy on a night out, etc., especially when I'm in a certain mood. And I wondered how to not allow more intense and long-planned BDSM sessions, 1 to 6 hours, for example, from being the only way to get aroused. 28 male, gay, open relationship of 9 years.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where if you do it often enough, your brain's going to get aroused, and your brain's going to start going in the direction of what normally happens. So sometimes it just helps to do something else for a while and surprise your brain so that it doesn't go the quick and dirty route, as it's called. So, you trigger your brain, and before you know it, your brain is traveling down a neural pathways that are used a lot. And so if you open up some new neural pathways and try something different, then you, generally speaking, you'll start to, your interests will change as well. I mean, not that there's anything, I mean, you know, if you're happy with 1 to 6 hour sessions, that's absolutely fine. But it sounds as if you would like to be able to have quickies from time to time and not always BDSM, in which case, Well, one of the reasons that in sex therapy we start with a sex ban is so that you can kind of rewire your brain. You can start with getting to know one another's bodies, doing different things, and just leave off the sex for a bit and then start again. If you want to do that, you could have a sex ban and have that conversation about what you can do within the ban and build up gradually to other things again. I mean, that's easier if you've got a long-term partner or a primary partner. If it's always with different people, then, you know, you've got to do the ban for yourself, really. But you can change that if you want to. It's just about resetting.
Yeah, and I suppose maybe it's about having a real think about what does turn you on in vanilla sex, or what could turn you on, and focusing in on that. I mean, sometimes with BDSM, we're talking about, like, you know, extreme feelings and you know, pain and pleasure and the mixing of that, and some of it's got on the extremes, but
very heightened emotion for sure.
Exactly,
there may well be a lot more emotion involved than there is in vanilla sex, and that might be something that you require to reset yourself. I mean, you might be using it as a means of self-regulation, and there's nothing wrong with that. It may be that you can find other ways to regulate that aren't so time consuming, because it sounds like
1 to 6 hours exactly. That the kids are at Sunday school for a long time.
but they're talking about altered mental states here, where people often sort of feel they're in a different dimension, and they feel very close to their partner and things like that. So it is very, very intense experience, and it's not always what you want. I mean, there may be other times when you would like a quick experience, but it just doesn't happen because your brain goes, oh no, I don't want that.
Would it be worth as well, you know, I feel like, you know, that there'll be power play involved in BDSM and all sorts of stuff like that. And perhaps, you know, the romance in some ways has been stripped away. You know, I mean,
I think you're thinking too vanilla, because maybe that if you want to talk about romance as closeness, it may well be. I mean, there may not be the wooing.
Or
the conversation beforehand may stand in for the wooing, or I don't know. But a lot of people say that afterwards is a really close and intimate and cuddly phase when people feel really connected. I mean, they often feel connected during as well, but very often afterwards is what people talk
about. Very,
about.
Very vulnerable. So you're right. But what I'm trying to say is maybe during vanilla sex, there's a way to sort of, you know, harness that emotion a bit in another way, because vanilla sex, people think it's boring and stuff, but it can still be passionate and loving and different sensations in different ways, you know, rather than whips and chains, which are extreme sensations in extreme ways.
Well, I think you're generalizing an awful lot. I mean, I think that
too much.
Yeah.
God, the penguin wouldn't stand for this.
The penguin would not stand for this.
Oh,
penguin's
no.
on vacation.
Oh, God. But let's just say for this episode, the penguin is not happy.
But the thing is, BDSM kink means a lot of different things to a lot of different people. Most things, it's not all whips and chains. I mean, there are so many different activities that you could be involved with.
Yeah. Vacuums. You know, this guy gets Hoovers involved.
Digs.
What?
Be serious.
Sorry.
And so, anyway, I would say, don't worry, experiment.
Yeah.
And if it's really, really a problem and you can't and you need help with it, then get help. Go see a sex therapist.
Okay, great. Well, let's finish on this one because it's quite interesting for the D-dog. So here we go. I'm considering a vasectomy in the near future.
Oh.
Let's have a quick pause. What's a vasectomy?
It's where the tubes that take the sperm outside the body from the testicles and outside the body are tied off so that that won't happen anymore. So that it's a form of contraception.
Yeah. So you can't produce sperm anymore.
Well, you can produce sperm.
You can't expel sperm.
But you shouldn't get out. I mean, sometimes people do actually, after a vasectomy, stop producing sperm. Yeah.
Interesting. As for myself, I do not want children as for now. Brackets. I'm rather sure also for the future. Close brackets. What should I consider? I'm 19 and non-binary. My sex is male.
Yeah, I think 19's very young to make that kind of decision because you can have reversals of vasectomies. But as I say, sometimes your sperm count may have fallen during that time.
Yeah, well, so I thought I would really, you know, and this is good timing after the penguin has just said that I said a bad thing earlier. So I did a real look into this. Well, if he wasn't on holiday, he'd be sat here shaking his little penguin-y beak. But
he'd be slapping you with a wet fish.
Yeah, exactly, with a mackerel, which he does love.
Yeah.
But I would say my friend went to go and get a vasectomy. He has had two children with his lovely wife, and he thought, you know, this is great. I'll go and get the vasectomy now. I'm done and dusted. He was 30. And I think they still turned him away, or basically kind of convinced him to be like, listen, have a real think about this and come back in a year. And I'm not sure if he's had it yet. But do you know what I mean? So doctors are always do say this sort of stuff. The pros are it is great contraception, you know, which won't involve any hormones for you or your partner for that sort of thing. the pros as well is that it's essentially permanent, you know, which means you don't have to keep going back every few years or every few weeks to take this stuff, which is great. So you don't really need to think about it again. However, the cons are, if it's not permanent, it costs a lot to get it redone. Mm. And sometimes the surgery is difficult and can fail, and often does.
Mm.
After you've had it, it's quite uncomfortable to, obviously, which I think is the case with most surgeries. And also, apparently, you still ejaculate like normal for a bit afterwards, and it flushes out basically to finish off all the stuff that you've got stored up.
Oh, yeah, because it's a few months before, because sperm production is about 3 months in advance of.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
That is nuts. Which so, I thought was really
so
interesting.
So you have to wait a few months before it's safe. And then you ejaculate, they look and they say, no, there's nothing there.
Mm, exactly. And then it's game on. And then lastly, I think this, and you might as well be said with this, is like, just because you can't ejaculate anymore doesn't mean that stops you giving or getting STDs. I just think that's a good point to say. But I think the main thing is you say, I do not want children as for now. I'm rather sure also for the future. I'm rather sure.
Yeah, at 19, I think things might change. It's a very drastic thing to do. You should be wearing a condom anyway, you know, for safer sex. So, there should not be an issue, really.
Yeah. I mean, good to think about these things. I would personally advise holding off, because you might regret it down the line.
Yeah, I think you find it hard to find somebody who'd agree to do it. To be honest with you, at 19, I think that very few surgeons would. I mean, they mostly say.
Yeah, my friend has two children in a loving marriage and was essentially turned away.
Yeah.
You know, that I don't know whether that's some, you know, weird thing going on with doctors where they're obsessed with people having children.
Well, they usually won't do it within a year of, as I understand it, although I know people who've had a vasectomy within a year of having a baby, but quite often they say wait, because when you're full of, you just want to sleep and everything just after you've had a baby, and you think, I never want another one of these little things. Then a year later you think, oh, wouldn't it be nice to have a brother or sister? And it's too late.
Yeah, exactly. There you go. Well, I hope you find that helpful. And gang, I hope you all enjoyed listening as per usual. Please keep those questions coming in. As I say again, the anonymous Google form is in the bio of this episode and our social media channels. We're at the RSC Pod. Make sure you're following, subscribing to wherever you're listening to this now. And we will see you next time for some more real sex education. Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to The Real Sex Education, which is hosted by Diggory Waite and Kate Campbell. The show is produced by Diggory Waite, and the executive producer is Claire Broughton. The Real Sex Education is a Hattrick podcast.
This podcast is based on the real-life relationship between Diggory Waite and his mother, accredited sex therapist Kate Campbell. The show is therefore inspired by, but otherwise unrelated to, the TV show Sex Education. But yes, Diggory does wish his mother was played by Gillian Anderson.